Hey, what's going on, guys? Taxation is theft, and we have with us today somebody very special that I've been talking to for several months now. He really knows a lot in this. You've heard me talk about, you know, the whether or not the income tax is something you actually have to pay, and of course we know that a lot of people have gone to jail trying to fight the IRS, and we have David William with us, and he's actually got a lot of really compelling evidence and arguments about this whole system, whether or not you have to pay, how much you have to pay, what's taxable, what's not taxable, and really there's a lot of interesting information. So without further ado, as they say, David, say hi.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. So I've actually been promoting your PDF on the site, so I don't know if anyone watching has downloaded
yeah.
the PDF, but there's a link to get that PDF in the description for the video. This is really an interesting. I mean, like, we talked for hours just over, you know.
We did.
Yeah, today.
Yeah, we've had a lot.
Today we talked for an hour. Yep. There's so many interesting, like, aspects to this, but really, like, what does it come down to? What's, like, the main misconception or
Well, yeah, okay. Well, the report's a great place to start, you know, if you want to get to some well-cited things and court decisions and things. But where you and I connected was I see taxation as theft as, like, that's a really good message to get out there, because there's an unbelievable number of people that are still kind of this zombie mode. They're like, you got to pay your fair share. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And I can't even really boost people. Although that sounds like you're trying to take that on. You're trying to get people's awareness raised that, hey, there's something wrong with this. And some of us, I think, have always seen that there's something wrong with, you know, like, you get your paycheck and there's this number for gross pay and then there's this number for net pay. And, like, the second number is much smaller. Like, I know personally, I always felt like there's something wrong with that.
Right.
You're not wrong.
You're sitting there doing the math, like, okay, I'm getting paid whatever amount per hour, and I worked 36 hours
right.
this week, so let me add this up. My paycheck
yeah, how much,
is this big.
How much of that did the IRS do?
Yeah. And
how much,
like,
of your work did the IRS do?
And you're expecting this check, and you're like, you're already, like, especially when you're younger, you're already like, okay, I'm gonna go see a movie, I'm gonna buy parts for my car, I'm gonna buy computer parts, you know, whatever,
yeah.
whatever you're into. You're already spending that, and then you get your check, and it's like, oh shit, I can't afford that.
Yep. Yep, and after those first couple of checks, you stop even looking at the gross. All you look at is the net, and that's really what is the worst thing about this system, is it pounds into your head that that's not even your money. And people have this attitude, you know, their whole lives, that, like, as soon as they earn X amount of dollars, that they automatically somehow magically owe some percentage of that to the IRS. And that's the hardest thing to overcome, is to snap people out of that, like, slave mentality,
right.
I call it. But to start there, go ahead.
Well, we're told it's for, or we're not even told it's for this. We just somehow believe it's for roads and all this other stuff, and it's
right.
not. Like,
yeah. Well, IRS has some propaganda where they show where your taxes go, but I don't believe a word of it. But even if that's true, even if it goes for good things, the bottom line is there's this feeling of it's being forced from you. And, you know, if you want, you ask me how to boil this down. What's it come down to? Like, go back to the Declaration of Independence. I mean, because that's actual law. People don't realize that. You know, it's got the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, which you have an unalienable right to, which everybody has. And people go, oh, that's a nice sentiment. Yeah, that was back in the 1700s. Like, that's somehow been forgotten about.
We didn't have electricity back then. Now we need...
Yeah. Yeah, believe it or not, it wasn't forgotten about, because that is actual – people don't realize that that is actual law. The Declaration of Independence is the first organic law. And if you don't believe me, you can go to the office of the Law Revision Council, whatever it is. Link to that in my report, where it's actually the front matter for the United States Code, the official version. They put the four organic laws, beginning with the Declaration of Independence. So that's the law. That's the primary law. And every law that comes after that has to be in harmony with that law. So how do we reconcile the income tax with the fact that you have a right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? It's contract.
So
it comes down to contract. You have a right to contract, and you're literally contracting your rights away. That's how they're getting you. They're working around your rights by duping you into a contract.
So,
that's effectively how it works.
Like, you've
okay.
worked with people, and you've actually had success in basically telling the IRS that my money is not taxable, and people who have had their money
right.
withheld, they're giving their money back.
That's correct. Now, I try to get people to, you know, the best way to avoid tax is to not have the money go to them in the first place, because once the IRS has your money, that's what the withholding is really for, is to, like, you go, oh, man. Like, now you have to file a return. In fact, you're eager to file a return. A lot of people are. They're banging down the IRS's door in mid-February to get their refund. So it's a withholding slash refund scam. They over-withhold a little bit. But, yeah, so the first thing I have people do that are new, that are employed by somebody, I have them, stop the withholding as much as possible by claiming exempt, whatever they have to do. And we stop the money flying out of their pocket. That's the first thing we need to do. And then once you're hanging on to your money, how do we make sure that you legally get to keep it and the IRS doesn't make a legal claim, you know, that you owe them that money? So that's really where the area that I work in. And, it has worked very, very well. Sometimes things have happened that even I don't believe. I didn't believe it when it first happened. I was like, I know that this is – I knew that this would work, but on some level I, like, didn't expect it to. You know what I mean? It was just so unbelievable. And that's why I try to convey that to people now. They're like, get out of here. Some of these results are in the report, and I think you've actually spoken to Chris on the phone, who's one of the clients whose results are shown in that report. In that situation, Chris hadn't filed for several years, and we were in the – he was actually being audited, which, you know, the IRS can audit you even if you don't file and just use available information. So that's what they were doing to him. So we think you owe this much, and they had proposed a tax of $363,000. And so I got involved, and we ultimately got the IRS to agree to zero tax, and they actually gave him a $5 refund. Now that sounds – people are like, what? Now, the reason we're able to do that is because we knew what the IRS already knows, which most people don't know, which is that there's a difference between just money that you make and this thing called taxable income. And we showed the IRS that we did know that difference, and they just let it go, because what else are they going to do? It comes down – that's another thing. People think the IRS can just do whatever they want, but that's only because you're playing a game that you don't know the rules of. You know, like if you were playing chess against somebody and you didn't know any of the rules, it would really look like that person could just do whatever they want to you, because they just keep winning. Right. They just keep taking all your pieces.
Over here. Like, yeah, this one can move. The pawn can move.
Right.
Eight spaces.
Right. It seems like somebody that, if you don't know the rules of the game you're playing, the other person seems like almost like have like godlike powers to just do whatever they want. But if you do know the rules, it's actually quite simple. You're the one with all the power. You're the one with the right to contract or to not contract. And that's really what this boils down to, because most people are not actually receiving anything that could qualify as taxable income unless they agreed to have it called that.
So what is taxable income?
Well, the income tax, this is a thing where I don't know, some of the viewers, listeners might be familiar with Pete Hendrickson. He's got a really good book that explains kind of the origins of income tax as it's basically a kickback of federal sourced income. And that makes sense. They would have a right to that. It's like a piece of the action. Like if you invested in the railroads, for example, those are corporations owned by federal government. You make profits from that. You owe them a little piece of that back. And that was the thing where they were trying to, you know, the income tax was sold to the public as, we're going to take all these rich fat cats that are making money off of the government. And, you know, that's how it was sold to the public. They were going to soak the rich. But it ended up being turned on everybody, just through misapplication. But that's what it properly is. It's like an excise tax on federally related business. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, I've heard this thing, excise tax, used, right? And
right.
To a lot of people, it's like it's an excise tax means when you do something and the government can tax it, and like to them,
right,
it means anything you do, oh, it's, you can exercise, and it's an excise tax because you're exercising yourself. But that's not really true.
No, that's actually, no.
Is an excise.
Right. Yeah, an excise is a tax on an activity, but it has to be an activity that the authority that's taxing you has a right to regulate. You know what I mean? So like if you have liquor, we talk about liquor traveling through interstate commerce. Interstate commerce is a power that the federal government has been legitimately given I don't want to say legitimate. Some people won't think it's legitimate, but let's just say that the authority is clear. It's been delegated from the states to the federal government. And so when they tax things moving through interstate commerce, you know, you can read the law and see it's really clearly explained you know, that's something that they can tax. And so the excise tax. Let's put it that way. It's not unconstitutional.
And
neither is the income tax because of what it really is. What we have is a situation where it's commonly misapplied through a lot of propaganda, a lot of brainwashing, and people just like being just used to this. You get your first job, like we said, and that money's just gone. And that didn't just happen because when you got first got hired for that job, you had to fill out a W-4, right? A W-4 form for your withholding. That's just something they hand to you, like with the other stack of things you have to sign. And it doesn't really feel like you have a choice in the matter. It's like, sign this. That's right. That's right. So really, who's the one that's forcing you into the system there? It's not the IRS. It's the employer. The employer is using the leverage of like, well, you're not going to work here unless you fill this out. Right. So you're really under duress, aren't you? You're filling that out. And that's where they get the authority. Once you fill out that piece of paper and sign it, now they've got that piece of paper. They use that as evidence that you've authorized this. Right. It's called an employee's withholding allowance certificate. When you sign in that, you're allowing the withholding to come out of your check, unless you claim exempt. Well, it depends on what you mean by taxpayer. I think people make a big deal about the word taxpayer when it's really not as big a deal as you might think it is. Let's go over what you are agreeing to. What you're agreeing to, if you don't claim exempt, is you're agreeing to allow a certain amount of withholding based on the number. You know, you fill out the worksheet and you put how many withholding exemptions that you're claiming, and you're basically giving permission to take that amount of tax out of your check unless you claim exempt. And it's interesting that they even offer the option of exempt when, you know, most people believe that, oh, we're all forced to do this and you don't have any choice. And like, so why are they offering you this option of exempt? And if you look a little further into it, you'll see that the law protects your right to claim exempt to an unbelievable degree. Like, why make it so easy for people to claim exempt? Well, most people don't realize how easy it is. But if you look at the law, it actually protects your right to claim exempt, and the IRS can't legally do anything about it, and neither can your employer. They have to accept it, whatever they think about it. And
what a lot of people are concerned about is if you file exempt, then at the end of the year, you're going to get basically a huge tax bill from the IRS, and you're going to have to come up with a shit ton of money to just pay.
Well, there. Yeah, and now we're hitting on that main assumption that people make, that as soon as they make money, that automatically means that they owe the IRS something. The exemption is just the first step of it, but you shouldn't do it if you're just going to assess yourself a tax at the end of the year anyway. But you have to realize that that's really how you're creating the tax liability. You're creating it yourself when you fill out that 1040. When you're assessing yourself a tax, you're the one making it legal after
right.
the, you know, whether they take money or whether they don't, you're the one that's making yourself liable for the tax by filling out the return.
So let's say you do file exempt. At the end of the year, your employer is going to report on a W-2, right, to the IRS?
Yes, they will.
And they're going to say,
that's correct.
We paid him this much income.
Yeah, well, actually, they'll call it wages on the W-2. You have all these little boxes, you know, right? And it says federal, and it says wages, and then it says Social Security wages, and then Medicare wages. Because the reason they do that is because there's different definitions for wages, depending on which tax is being taken out. So there's a definition for wages, and you know, in the law, and whenever they define a word in the law, you can bet your ass that it does not mean what you think that word means, you know. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to define it.
Right.
But there's no way. Back to the Declaration of Independence. I mean, there's no way they have the right to just come along and take a chunk of your paycheck, especially when it's before you even owe the tax. I mean, if you think about it, they're taking the money in advance. So how could they possibly have a right to just take that before you even owe it? Doesn't that seem crazy?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, to me, the whole concept of income tax seems crazy in the first place. But,
but to me, that's proof that there's a contract. There's an implied contract, and that's why they need to get your signature on that form, because what you're really doing is you're saying it's okay to take money out of my paycheck. They can't do it otherwise. No, I mean, not legally. They can still do it. But you would have a right to complain if you didn't fill out the form and go, hey, that wasn't wages. Why are you taking money out of my paychecks?
Right.
Because then we get down to what the definition of wages is, which we don't want to get too deep into the weeds on that maybe. But you're right. The employer reports on the W-2 that you made wages, and you get a copy of that, right?
right.
in the mail or electronically from the employer. And there's a reason why they have to give you that, because they're required to give you notice that they reported this stuff to IRS, and all it is their opinion. That's all employers reporting is what they consider to be the truth. But unfortunately for you, they swear under penalty of perjury that that's all true. So it's like testimony. It's right. like a witness's testimony against you. So now you have to deal with that. And you have to decide if you agree with it or not.
I'm going to step away and see if I can improve the connection here. But keep talking.
Okay.
We're still live.
Yeah, I'll keep going. Yeah, you get that W-2, or if you're not working as somebody's employee, maybe you're getting a 1099. It's really the same basic idea. They're reporting that what you were paid is taxable, and it's up to you to decide if you agree with that information. And understand, it's not about how much money you made. That I don't. When I handle cases for clients, we never claim that the person didn't receive the money that was paid to them. But that's not the issue. The issue is how much of this was taxable income, if any. How much of this was wages, which is also income, the way they define it. That's a common argument. People go, "Oh, well, wages aren't income." Yeah, they are. The way they define wages, it absolutely is income. And so you'll never get anywhere making that argument. But only because of how they have this weird little, you know, custom definition of wages, and it doesn't mean what the common definition of wages, where we think of you just work for somebody and they pay you and that's your wages. Government doesn't have any right to tax that, right. And they know that. They know that. That's why they passed the law the way they did and gave it this little obscure, you know, limited definition, but then they convinced people not to ever look at the law.
Right.
So you just assume, you know, hey, well, it's wages, so I guess I better pay my tax on it. And that's how they get you, because they don't, you know, people don't look at the law.
So Kelby's asking a question right now. He says, can you unsign it?
You don't have to. You don't have to, because it's an invalid signature in the first place if it's under duress. So keep in mind, the only thing that the W-4 obligates you to is that you're allowing withholding unless you claim exempt. That's your little exit strategy right there. And the interesting thing about that is, the government puts that on there as an option, I think legally, because they know they're on very thin ice, you know, if they're taking your money in advance, right? So they offer you that exempt option, yet you're totally propagandized to think, oh, I can't do that, right? Like everybody's like kind of weary of doing it. Meanwhile, it's your remedy. You know, in the law, if they're going to, you know, force you to do something like sign that form, they have to provide you some way to opt out. And that's it right there. When you claim exempt, and if you think about it, if you're not claiming exempt, you are by definition consenting to allow at least some withholding, right?
Right, and even the concept
that's what it's about.
Withholding is this is how you're assuming that you're going to make this much quote unquote income or wages,
right?
And
yeah.
and that at the end of the year they're going to tax that, and so that's why
right.
you're letting them withhold it.
Yeah, and this is where you need to know what you're doing a little bit. You need to know what your rights are, and that's the first rule of this game. If you want to know the real rules of the game, you have to know what your rights actually are. And if I wouldn't recommend somebody just claim exempt without a game plan for what they're going to do down the road. You know, some people do that, like, oh, I need a little extra money in the next couple months,
right.
And so they'll just claim exempt as a gimmick. But you shouldn't do that.
Then the IRS is going to say, oh, well, you made all this money.
That's right.
Where's our cut?
Yeah, and they might actually interfere with your exempt claim too. So that's the first thing that when I get a new client, I make them aware of, like, look, if you claim exempt, but like I've got like a protection plan for where I respond to the IRS on your behalf if they challenge you on this, because they will they don't do it like to everybody, but you know, to some people they will send you a notice and try to intimidate you into changing it back. You know, they want you to submit a new W-4. But isn't it interesting that they need you to sign a new W-4? Like, if they have the right to take the money, why don't they just take the money? What's this shit where they're trying to get you to sign? You need to sign a new form. Here, sign this right here. Like, it's obviously a coercive type of thing where as soon as they get your signature, they're going to pretend like you voluntarily gave that signature. Right?
Right. You agreed to it. We sent
that's right.
a letter asking, and you agreed
your
to
it. That's right. Your signature is always evidence of your consent, no matter what the circumstances really were. If somebody, you know, is threatening you and gets you to sign a document like your employer does, like, well, the implied threat is you're not going to – we're not going to hire you, or we'll fire you on day one if you don't fill out this form. That's a threat. It's an implied threat.
Right.
And so it invalidates the whole thing. So you don't have to unsign the document, but recognize the duress and how it invalidates the whole thing. You know, if you're working in the private sector, you're not working in some, you know, a government occupation, then there's no way that this employer actually has authority to force you to fill out this W-4. They don't. So you shouldn't have to fill it out. You shouldn't even have to claim exempt in order for them not to steal money out of your paycheck. So you don't have to unsign it, but just recognize that it's going to be used as evidence that you authorized withholding, which is why I recommend the exempt, because that's an opt-out that they give you. And then, you see what's great about that is if you claim exempt, not only do you get all your money, but now you don't have any right to complain about them forcing you to fill out that form because you don't have any damages. Does that make sense? Well, you got to keep all your money, so what are you complaining about? So legally, it's like they're covering their ass with this W-4 form. They gave you the opportunity to claim exempt, and you didn't take it. So you must have wanted to have tax taken out of your check. Right? That's the logic that they're going by.
That's insane.
It's sneaky, right?
But it's sneaky. So now the thing is, even if you file exempt, they still withhold some stuff, right? Like they withhold the Social Security still, right?
Well, you're right. They will withhold FICA, but that's a different tax. And, you know, back to this thing about taxpayer. The word taxpayer just means the person that's liable for whatever tax there is. So like with FICA taxes, well, let's say like with income tax, your employer takes the money out of your check, right? But you're the taxpayer. You're the one that's ultimately liable for whatever the tax is going to be. But when it comes to FICA, even though it's coming out of your check, the employer is actually the one that's liable. They're the one that's held responsible for that tax. So that's why it's hard. That's why even though you do exempt, they're not going to they're still going to take out the FICA because they consider that their tax to pay, and they'll be on the hook for that if they don't take it out of your check. They're not on the hook for your income taxes, even though many of them think they are. You know, there's some people who are really stupid out there. They're like, well, we're going to get held responsible for your income taxes if you don't claim exempt. No, it says right there in the law that if you give them an exempt W-4, the employer it shall not be required to deduct and withhold income tax. And it actually, in the regulations, it actually prohibits them. It says the employer shall not withhold and deduct income tax if you have an exempt W-4 on file with them.
Right. So someone, Daniel Murphy's asking, I can't do anything with a union job that I've been working at for 10 years, right? Well, you can change your W-4. You can always resubmit a new W-4 whenever.
Yeah, you can do that anytime. Yep, you can do that absolutely anytime.
Change your exempt status. You can refile that at any time. So
right, and by the next paycheck, they're supposed to, you know, within like 15 days or something like that, they're supposed to adjust to the new information you've given them. That's right.
So I want to jump to another interesting conversation for a minute because
sure.
We were talking about this before we started going live about how I was trying to dig up the indictment for Al Capone, and I wasn't able to find the actual indictment, but I found like...
Is it on Pacer? Did you try Pacer?
I didn't, but it might be there.
I would think.
I did find some interesting letters between, you know, like some of the IRS investigators and like writing... it's probably would have all been an email today, but like letters that some field agent was sending back to the IRS headquarters, and it had all kinds of really interesting things in there, but what I was looking for was you know, did he not file because not filing is not a crime, and was he liable for a tax that he didn't pay, because these letters started referring to him as like as a taxpayer, which is a legal term,
right?
Or someone who pays
that's
tax.
Right, and actually he was a taxpayer because the tax they were talking about was excise taxes on alcohol, and he was distilling or importing alcohol from Canada illegally, like kind of bootlegging. Like, I don't think alcohol was illegal anymore, but he was still just, you know, bootlegging the alcohol, because then he doesn't have to pay the taxes, you see, and then he can make more profit. So he was a taxpayer as far as they were concerned for the liquor excise taxes that he had failed to pay, and that's what he went to prison for, not for income taxes.
So not even income tax. So it was like,
yeah,
this isn't a tax that we were considering constitutional and obligatory. This was a tax that was constitutional and obligatory, but
yeah,
it's not the other tax that everyone thinks is constitutional and obligatory. It's constitutional, yeah, and not obligatory.
And you know what's really interesting is, you know, when you read the part of the Internal Revenue Code, because back then they were the Bureau of Internal Revenue. But, you know, alcohol taxes are in the Internal Revenue Code. They're not in the same subtitle as the income tax, but it's a different subtitle. But they explain, like, that tax really, really clearly. And the income tax codes are notorious for being really vague and hard to understand. I'm like, well, I guess it applies to me,
right,
like when you read it. But there's no mistaking when you read the liquor. And the reason for that is because with alcohol taxes, there's clear authority. The federal government doesn't have any – they don't have any reason to tiptoe around and write the words of the law like all carefully to try to entrap you into, you know, agreeing to be subject to something you're not subject to. It's really clear what their authority is. It says, like, you know, for every proof gallon of, you know, whatever, like, the X amount is due and the distiller is the liable party for it. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer. But when you get to the income tax, you try to read those things and, you know, they want you to read things into it that are not there.
Right.
Because – and the reason for it, the reason they don't write the laws more clearly is because they don't have the authority to write the laws more clearly. The best they can do is write the laws to try to bamboozle you into reading it. Most people don't even read the laws in the first place. They'll just go to the IRS website. I can't believe on Twitter, like, I have people like, they think it's an argument. They'll send me a link from the IRS website. I was like, did you just send me a link from the IRS propaganda to make a point? You know, they're not legally bound by anything they say in their propaganda or their publications.
And what I think,
so if you go by that, that's on you.
You have, there's so many arguments on the, you know, because the IRS has a duty to kind of protect their scam. And they have all these counter arguments on their website that are like,
right.
Oh yeah, no, this is proof that you have to pay this tax. But they cite their well, for one thing, they cite the CFR instead of the law, which,
well, the regulations, as long as the regulations don't exceed — CFR is Code of Federal Regulations for people that don't know — but as long as the regulations don't exceed the scope of the authority given in the statute, it's okay. So it's not necessarily foul play for them to cite a regulation, but, you know, it's always got to —
it says things in there like, everybody, like, it uses like broad terms, like,
right.
Any person, right. Any individual. And but like you said, it's like that when they say any person, they're referring to any person who's already like in this limited scope that's already limited.
Yes,
by —
because it certainly doesn't mean every person on the planet, does it?
Right.
Or every individual
Canadians,
on the planet.
Canadians,
yeah,
don't
so
pay
you,
U.S.
Yeah.
income tax.
Yes, and Chinese people don't go to, you know, in China, don't go to jail for not filing their U.S. income tax. So
right.
It obviously doesn't apply to them.
Exactly. And what
so
I
we have to know, where does it – who does it apply to?
Right.
Know?
And
that's
so –
we get into the assumptions.
I used to have, you know, I used to do – pretty much all my work was, you know, quote-unquote independent contractor, which I later found out is a legal term that means –
That's right.
Something completely
That's
different.
That's right. It means you're engaged in a trade or business in the United States, which is a fancy, you know, that those both trade or business and United States both have custom definitions in
right.
the income tax code. And again, anytime you realize that they have a custom definition, you can bet your ass it does not believe what it, you know, does not mean what you are going, what you would normally assume
right.
that it means.
We're just thought to
That's
like,
the whole purpose of defining it.
Everybody, like, oh, you're an independent contractor. Okay, I'll 1099 you. That's just like how
yeah,
people would talk. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm an independent contractor. I didn't know what the hell that meant. It's just like,
right.
I am.
That's
okay,
how they get you. You're young, you're doing your first job, and you're just going to do what you're told because you don't want to blow
right.
this. This is your first job. And that's how they get you.
And
then
and
they
then,
get you used to it, and then you never ever question it.
And
except
then
for people like us.
I got to file my taxes. I don't want to file my taxes. Well, you have to. And everyone says, oh, you have to. Everyone. So I'm scared. So I go to the post office and I get the 1040 form. And it doesn't say
wow.
anywhere on there, how do you figure out if you are liable for income tax? It just says, fill in these spots with all these numbers of all the money that you made, assuming that all the money that I made is taxable. But they don't
well,
tell
here's
me
the,
how to figure out if my
well,
money's taxable.
Well, now we're getting into like what the contract actually is, and the reason they make a U.S. Individual 1040 form so widely available, you know, those are the ones that they have stacks of at the post office. Why don't they have stacks of 1040 NR forms for non-resident aliens? Because that's what all Americans are by default, is non-resident aliens, the way they define that term.
Right.
Now, see, they give it a weird name, so you'll go, ugh, I'm not that. I'm an American.
Right.
No, if you're an American, you're a non-resident alien by default. But whenever you sign
well,
that 1040, you're telling them that you're – yeah.
Because I think this is important, and like a lot of people think, oh, a non-resident alien, that means I'm not a U.S. citizen, or that means I'm Mexican or Canadian. Or
no. Yeah, the precedent for what I'm saying is it's a Supreme Court case called Brewshaber v. Union Pacific Railroad. It was in 1916, right after the 16th Amendment was passed. Just 3 years after, and this guy was challenging the 16th Amendment. Frank Brewshaber was an American, and he was born and raised in New York, lived his whole life in New York. but he held some stock in the Union Pacific Corporation. And under the new law, all of a sudden they started withholding tax out of his stock profits. So he sued. He's like, what the hell? Nobody ever did this before. Why are you taking how am I subject to income tax? He wasn't used to that. He filed in his case, made it to the Supreme Court. But he was an American, and he lost. You know why he lost?
Why?
Because Union Pacific Railroad is a federal corporation. That's the only reason he lost, because it was legitimately taxed, because it's a, like I said, it's a piece of the action. They could tax that. But guess what? This guy was a stockbroker. He had lots of other stocks. Nobody was trying to tax that. And certainly nobody's trying to tax his paycheck either back then. So Bruce Shaber v. Union Pacific Railroad, and right after that, a thing that people should look up is Treasury Decision 2313. That a few weeks after that Supreme Court decision came down, they described Frank Bruce Shaber as a non-resident alien, even though he's an American.
And so doesn't this also have to do with the definition of what the United States is in the tax code?
It does, because United States in federal law generally means the federal government or areas under exclusive federal control. So when you say you're a non-resident, all you're saying is you're not a resident of a federal area.
Which is,
you know, we have
Washington,
a federal
DC,
area would be
federal
Washington,
park.
D.C. Yeah, any federal area inside a state is usually very clearly marked. Like, you're in, like, when you step on that land, like, you're in federal jurisdiction now. If you commit a crime on federal land, it's a federal crime. Even though you're in whatever state you're in, it's federal enclave, right?
Right.
Or Puerto Rico, Guam,
right, which is
American Samoa.
That's a whole other conversation. So yeah. we have these like little these territories, right? Which are they're forced to pay taxes, and from what I understand, the rights that they receive in return are very limited. And it seems like there's not a big incentive for the United States to just turn these places into states, because they're extracting from them, and they don't want to give anything back.
Here's a great example of what I'm talking about. You look back to Hawaii and Alaska, both became states around the same time, like 1959, mm-hmm. I think, right?
Yep.
In Internal Revenue Code, before 1959, Alaska and Hawaii were included in the federal definition of states, which also included, like, you know, the Philippines, and like, it didn't mean the Union states. It only meant areas where the federal – so they called them states, but what they really meant was federal states. Like, Alaska and Hawaii were included in the definition. Like, all federal territories and Alaska and Hawaii, that was all included in the definition of state until they became Union states. Then they had to remove Alaska and then Hawaii from those definitions. Isn't that interesting? So they were states according to the income tax code before they became states of the Union. After they became states of the Union, Alaska and Hawaii had to be removed from the definition of state, because state in the income tax code means a federal state.
Right. So let's go back for a second, because I know, like, in the tax code, it refers to a lot of, you know, like you said, with this railroad, the railroad was a federal corporation. What about state corporations? Like, if you work for a corporation that's incorporated in California, does that fall under the same category?
That is properly a foreign corporation relative to the federal government, you know, because everything, when you're talking foreign, we're talking legally foreign. We're not saying it's foreign to America. It's not in another country. It's in a state of the Union, but that is a foreign jurisdiction, because there's state law and federal law. And like I said, if you step on federal land, you're now in a different jurisdiction. So all foreign is always relative to whoever's talking about. So it's a domestic corporation to, say, California, if it was chartered in California, but it is foreign. It is properly foreign to the United States, although – you know, businesses don't know any better, so they file as a domestic corporation to the federal government. And what do you know? They owe tax on everything they make, but only because they declared themselves a domestic federal corporation without knowing what that means.
Right.
And that's how they get you, man. They get you under contract by you signing stuff you don't understand, or you think you understand it, or just your tax specialist goes, oh, sign here, because you don't want to be bothered with it. And that's how they get you.
A lot of corporations, even small business corporations, they usually hire tax accountants or lawyers or something to do all their taxes and everything. So why
I call them go betweens?
Yeah. Why don't they know more about this? Why aren't they saying, oh, well, you're not a taxable corporation because such and such? Why do they just blanket?
They have no incentive to do so. They're making plenty of money with the system the way it is. They weren't educated that way. And so, if you want to see, you know, take this information to any accountant, especially the results. I've shown the results that I've gotten to a tax lawyer before. He just refused to believe it and just shut down. Like he was like a robot that just like it didn't compute, and he couldn't handle it because it gets in the way of his livelihood. You know, like his livelihood depends on believing this certain paradigm, and when I threaten that, I'm threatening his livelihood. So they either shut down or they get really angry or they scoff or they go, you know, and they'll link you, they'll send you a link to IRS propaganda. So right. Oh, the IRS says this isn't true. Like, right. Oh, nice. Okay. I don't care.
So there's a couple interesting I just want to say,
we could do a whole show like ripping apart IRS propaganda. Like, let's get the list of frivolous arguments out
I'm
and
totally
I can destroy all of these. They always say like a taxpayer, you know what I mean? Like you were saying, they use that term that a taxpayer is by definition, you know, in the situations
taxes.
They're talking about, somebody that's already subject to the tax. So it's like somebody that's under contract. We'll do that in another show. I'd love to just rip apart some of this.
But that's also
I call it debunking the debunkers because they act like they're debunking what I'm talking about. But their stuff is it's really well done propaganda. I'll hand it to them.
It's also like, you know, even
but you can pick it apart.
We were saying earlier, even if you make $100,000 in a year and you make $10 that's taxable, you're now a taxpayer. But that's kind of like your analogy that you used of a fishing license, right?
That's correct. Well, yeah, like just because you – well, to say that you if you have $10 of taxable income, you may not even have a requirement to file to report that because, you know, that's the way they do the filing. You don't have to report absolutely everything. They say if your income is below, you know, X amount, like you don't need to file anything.
Right.
Right. But that's not true for a non-resident alien. Like a non-resident alien has to file even if they didn't make any money if they engaged in what's called a trade or business, which is a federally connected – you know, office. They're required
with the
to report.
With the federal
government. And they would have to report that $10 even though they're not going to owe any tax on it because the tax rates are such that even they get an exemption.
Right.
But, so a taxpayer is just somebody who is subject to a tax or potentially subject to a tax. That's
all
it means.
But that doesn't mean that all of – just because you're a taxpayer doesn't mean that all of your income is taxable or that all of your – the money that you
absolutely
earn is taxable.
Right. Absolutely right. So when people argue, I'm not a taxpayer, it's kind of a useless argument because they're really just saying, look, you're the there's a certain amount of tax that's due and you're the one that owes it. Nobody else owes it. That's all they're saying when they say you're the taxpayer for this tax. Now, that tax might be zero, but you're the taxpayer. So there's nothing wrong with – there's nothing evil about the word taxpayer. I used to argue that. I would write back to IRS and go, don't you call me a taxpayer.
Fighting words.
But it doesn't matter.
Right.
What matters is what you said. Like, how much is your tax liability? Just because you're a taxpayer does not mean that you're liable for any tax or even required to file a return. And that's mainly what I do in my consulting practice is just show people, educate people on what their rights are. And we start with the foundation, which is, you know, the Declaration of Independence. People have a lot of cognitive dissonance. That's like everybody's heard, you know, oh, yeah, I have unalienable rights. Yet that's not what you experience in your everyday life. So people just tend to go,
It's the land of the free and the home of the brave, and people get pissed off if you don't stand up for that song. But meanwhile, you're not free because you're handing over all your money, and you're not brave because you're not even willing to challenge the IRS to protect your own property.
I call it the home of the slaves because, you know, you really are – it's voluntary servitude. And, you know, if you go to my report, you know, one of the things – people you can see some of the things that people have argued that hasn't worked. Like when somebody goes – you know, somebody quite properly recognized that, hey, if you can just come along and take a chunk of my paycheck and I don't have any choice in the matter, how am I not a slave? That's slavery, right?
Yep.
Like there's no real difference. You're robbing my money or you're making me work for that amount of time for free. Either way, I'm a slave.
It's not
right?
even that. It's almost more like they're not coming and taking it from you. They're asking you to go take it to them and deliver it. You know?
Well, and the reason for that, the reason why that I always say if they have a right to take it, why don't they just take it? Because they can't. They need you to cooperate in order for this to work. So it is not involuntary servitude. It is voluntary servitude. And the courts have basically said that as much. Someone argued that the income tax couldn't be applied to him because it's involuntary servitude. And the court just flat out said, well, if you're going to call it servitude, it would not be involuntary servitude as referenced in the 13th Amendment. So
right.
The court's indirectly saying, you're volunteering for this, buddy.
Right.
So what are you complaining about? That's why you don't have a right to complain in the courts. That's why they won't listen to you because you're considered to be under contract. You signed up for this, or so the evidence says.
So,
and that's really what we have to get into. That, yeah.
I want to get into there's a question which kind of relates to what we're talking about, or a couple questions actually. How do you find out if your income is taxable? And if you get a W-2, we kind of went over that. W-2 does not mean that your income is taxable. It means that your employer thinks it was taxable. But
that's
so how
right.
How do you know? What is actual – we talked about what's not taxable income. What is taxable income?
Well, that's the thing. The important thing to recognize is that it is your determination to make, because you are the final person that decides that. And see, so let's go through what typically happens. You know, your employer sends the W-2. You get your copy. You go, oh, I got to go to my accountant, or you're going to do whatever. And you're just going to hand all that information off to them, and they're just going to assume that you agree with all of it, because why would you give it to them if you didn't agree with it? So your W-2 gets attached to your return, the wages get reported on there, and you sign. They tell you to sign here, and it gets filed, and now you owe tax. But only because you agreed with all that stuff. Or let's just say you did not disagree with it at any point. And so but you have to recognize it is your determination to make, and you're kind of
– resume. I think.
Oh, good.
It looks like everyone's
it's gonna
still
here. It's going to cut out that controversial part I just said.
Yeah, sorry guys.
But I'll say it again.
Yeah, say it again. We just got disconnected, so
Here's the rule. Here's the general rule. Rule number one, just remember this. Don't ever, ever use a Form 1040 again. Even if you file a return, don't ever use that form. There's no law that requires you to use that form. Courts have admitted that. The courts will say all that's really required is an honest reporting of whatever income is taxable.
And so you recommend in some cases to use a 1040 NR or
if you're going to use any if anything I would file as if you're an American now, like, and I want to be careful here because I don't want anybody to just go off half cocked and just do this. Well, this guy said I should just say I'm a non-resident alien. This isn't about saying you're something. This isn't about like just saying the right thing to get out of paying taxes. It's not a gimmick. This is a thing where you really have to understand what you're doing, because if you don't, they're certain to test you, you know, like they're going to push back a little bit. And what will you do then? Or what will you do when they don't do what they're supposed to do? That's where all these other methods that people have tried to get out of taxes, it don't really work, because it's very like boilerplate. Okay, you do this and then they're supposed to do this. And then when they don't do what they're supposed to do, you're like, oh, shit, sorry. You know, you have to, which is why I emphasize having that foundation, like. Right, so you got to know what you're doing before you just sign something telling the IRS you're a non-resident alien. I wouldn't recommend anybody just jump in and start doing that.
Right.
Without having it, you know what I mean? That's why I have the report, and that's why I do this as a consulting practice, because it's really difficult. People would love it for me to just go, hey, just tell me what to say to get out of paying taxes.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's very gimmicky.
Not that easy.
And they will know it, and it doesn't – it's not as easy as that, but it's not – that's not to say either, but it does with integrity. You have to like have some integrity behind what you're doing. We can't just say the magic words and expect that to do anything. Like, this really is a thing where you have to learn about what your rights are, and it, like in a very and live that experience, and not just I really think it does the whole thing an injustice to just turn it into, oh, just tell me what to say, get out of paying taxes. That attracts all the wrong people. It's just people that are like looking for one. You know, are you familiar with that method?
No. Tell me about that. So they file a return that's
okay. Good. Don't worry about it.
But people is that basically where they lie on the they basically just make up a shit ton of numbers.
Yeah, people use it to scam the IRS out of refunds.
Right. And I know that this is where a lot of people get.
Yes, and sometimes the IRS.
Our connection is getting kind of choppy, I guess.
You there?
Yep.
Oh yeah, sorry about that.
So,
yeah, people go to jail for that kind of stuff.
Like, right, because you're basically lying.
Yeah, that guy hit me up for like, you know, yeah, and it's conspiracy to defraud the United States, because it's all about your intent. Are you trying to cheat them? And that's where I think it's really important to be honest and sincere.
Sucks when the shoe's on the other foot, right?
Yeah, you have to be really honest and sincere with your approach on this, or they will use it against you. If they have any evidence that makes you look like a weasel, or makes it look like you were trying to pull something on them, that's the kind of stuff they use in front of juries when they prosecute people, because they have to prove that you intended to evade a tax. So it's not a crime to be wrong. Like, if I'm wrong about all this, and by the way, nobody should believe anything I say. You should check this stuff out for yourself. That's why I do the report and provide you legal citations in court, so you can go and connect these dots for yourself. I'm very confident you'll reach the same conclusions I have, but don't believe anybody. Because if you just if you say these things without integrity, they can use that against you. You know, there's some people I've worked with that have like every month they're trying some new method, and they look really bad. And IRS saves everything you send them. So they've tried one method, then that didn't work, then they tried another one, then that didn't. And all the IRS has to do is pull all that out if they want to prosecute somebody and go, this guy will say anything to get out of paying taxes.
Yeah,
he just doesn't want to pay his fair share. And look, they're showing that you don't have any integrity. And it's really easy to get a jury to believe that you had criminal intent if you're all over the place like that.
Right.
So I want to get to some
of these other some of these other questions that are down here. First of all, a 1040 EZ, is that pretty much the same rules? You recommend not using that as much as a 1040?
Yeah, don't use that either, because the 1040 and the 1040 EZ and the 1040A and all that stuff, those are U.S. individual forms. And we brushed briefly on what United States means, but basically you're a person that is subject to exclusively federal jurisdiction.
Okay.
Is what that means. So if you don't want to be that, you don't file that form, because that's what you're telling them you are. So you file that. So don't use that.
Here's another one, and this one I've run into myself. If you try to get a loan for a home, especially if it's the federal FHA loan, they require that you show tax returns as proof of income. If you file exempt and then later you realize that you made $0 in taxable income. And so you have your non-1040 returns to show you filed something saying that you had no income. Does that affect your ability to get this loan? And does having an FHA loan, because now that's doing business with the federal government, right? Is that
– Well, I mean, just because you take a loan from them, that doesn't make all your money – that doesn't make you a federal subject per se. You'd have to look carefully at the terms and conditions of an FHA loan. I'm sure they give FHA loans to you don't have to be a – You'd have to look at how they define who's eligible to receive that loan. That's a question I don't really know the answer to. But in generally, I can tell you, when banks, they only want tax returns because that's an easy way to verify that you're not lying about your income to them. Because most people will try to inflate their income to a bank, but nobody inflates their income when they're reporting to the IRS, right?
Right.
So this is a good way to get this dude to tell us what his income is honestly. Because they don't want to take a risk on a bad loan by, you inflating what your income is. So that's why they use tax returns. But, there are lenders that don't require tax returns, or you could just have a conversation with them and go, look, I can verify that I can afford these payments, and here's how much I made. Here's my tax returns. But you should know I excluded, all of this from the tax return because it's not taxable income. Just explain it to the bank, just like that.
Yeah, and I kind of went through that process once, and it was actually really difficult because for FHA, because it is a federal government thing, that's actually one of their actual requirements. So a bank's not allowed to give that without that, from what I understand. And the other banks,
that's fine. Then file tax returns and give it to them if you're trying to get a loan from you got to play by their rules if you want their treats.
Right, and so what you're saying is maybe if you can at least talk to the banker if you can actually say, hey, look, I've got this much money in my bank account. I get this much money that's given to me every month.
That's right. There's lenders that do not require tax returns because, drug dealers need to buy houses too. I don't know if they take out a loan, but maybe they just show up with the cash. They probably launder the money and pretend I'm just barely making this. But there are plenty of lenders that will lend to you without requiring tax returns. And just because you had to file a tax return does not mean you have to take every money, every cent that you made and declare that as taxable income. And you can explain the difference to the bank. I've got back in 2006 when I bought a house I hadn't filed income tax returns in 4 years, but I had bank statements and I could prove how much money I made and I got the loan, no problem. Now, this isn't
awesome.
Then. Right. Things were the housing market was really loosey-goosey back then. But the same principle applies. They're only trying to verify what your income is, and some of them will let you do that without tax returns. Some will demand tax returns no matter what, but it's pretty much just a check-the-box requirement so they can say, okay, we did what we're supposed to do to vet this guy before lending him money. And I would just explain to a lender that what's going going on there. Like, here's my tax return. Here's how much I made, and here's how much I excluded from the income I reported. The bank's not interested in whether you paid your taxes or not.
And when he says, I clearly you're making $200,000 a year, but you're paying $0 in taxes, and the IRS isn't after you. Tell me your secret. Right. Just send them David's information.
Yes. That's the thing. Now, banks do care if you have a lien against you and stuff like that, but they don't care about potential tax liability. They see you have, 10 years of not filing and the IRS isn't after you. They're like, all right, whatever, dude. If you do, as long as you can make the loan, that's all they care about. They want to lend you money. Keep that in mind. People go in like kind of thinking like the banks don't want to do it. They just have to do their due diligence. They want to find a way to lend you money. So just be upfront with them.
Right.
And
that's how they make money.
And do that. But, so, yeah, and FHA, I don't know about.
Yeah, FHA is a government program, so just like any other government program, because here's the thing with FHA, it's like they give you like a 3% down payment and they give you a really, really low interest rate. There's free cheese in a mousetrap. It's, there's got to be some hook to that.
That's right.
Anyway, so
that's right. Free cheese in a mouse. That's a good thing.
Going on to the next question, somebody's asking, what do you do if you're an employer? So I guess, let's say you don't want to withhold but you don't want the IRS coming after you for not withholding, especially if it's Social Security and the other one that you said that they are liable for.
Well, those are different taxes, but it all works the same way. I mean, the employers are who I really want to talk to, because I'd really like to get – the employers are doing the dirty work of the IRS. They're the ones that are forcing their employees to fill out these things all because some tax guy told them they had to. They need to realize that they're violating the rights of their employees. Even if the employees are going along with it and not waking up, it is a potential liability for the employer. I'm sure there are some many thousands of woke employers already that just don't withhold any taxes from their workers. And, you can't withhold it and then keep it. You'll go to jail for that. But you don't take the money out of their checks and then not give it to the IRS. I'm not saying that. But there are some employers that when the employer's paying the payroll taxes, they have to fill out a form and sign it and report. It's just like a tax return, like every quarter. And they're reporting how much they took out of their – so it works the same way as everything we've been talking about. You're literally volunteering yourself to be liable for these taxes with your own signature.
And so now if you're a business owner and your employees tell you that let's say you take the W-4 and you ask your employees, hey, here's a W-4. Do you want to fill it out? Because if you are if this income is taxable for you, then fill it out. And if not, I'll throw it in the trash.
I don't know. If it were me, if I had a company, I would just go, look, I don't do that stuff. And if you want to withhold, if you want to, report that as income on your return, that's totally up to you. You don't need a W-2 from me to do it. And, you can make estimated tax payments yourself to the IRS. But I'm not doing all that because it doesn't apply here. So if you want to work here, this is how we do it. And it's completely within the law, whatever. If you're not okay with getting all of your paycheck, then maybe you want to go work someplace else. I don't know. That's how I would handle it, because because I would understand that I'm making myself liable by just even forcing that person to sign the W-4. There's no reason to do it. It's not even optional. Optional unless they're actually a federal officer. It's complete fraud. I mean, it's constructive fraud because the person doesn't usually know that it's fraud, right. But it still has the same effect as fraud.
So something you just said gave me this memory of I used to hire some video editors and software engineers, and I would pay them cash, like cash,
yep.
not checks, cash.
Right.
And one of these guys, like, I paid him, and he was the first time, and it was a big stack of 20s, and he's like, what the hell is this? And I was like, it's legal tender. and he was like, he actually didn't work for me that long because he felt uncomfortable working for someone who
feels like you're shady, and he feels like you're shady and you're gonna get shut down
and he was gonna go to jail with me or something, and he's gonna be sharing a cell.
Why you have to understand what your rights are, and you have to understand what other people's rights are too. So that's how I put it to an employee, like, look, we are a woke company and we have concluded that, and you can do this research yourself, here's a manual. I would make it part of the employee manual. Here, look at this. There's nothing stopping you from declaring this as income and reporting it and paying whatever you want to pay, but you're not obligated to, and I'm not obligated to do all that stuff, and I'm not going to do it because it would be committing fraud, because I know that it's fraud. So I can't even claim that I thought I had to do it. You know, it's like, if once you have knowledge of how this works, you can't get away with that anymore. You go, well, I have to, if I do what everybody else is doing, now I'm committing intentional fraud.
Right.
I'm doing something that I know is wrong. And that's why I won't file a 1040 either, because I would be committing perjury to say that I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm not. I never have been, even when I said I was for years. It doesn't make it true.
So Martin's asking an interesting question here, and it's on the topic of a different tax, but it's still, I think relatively similar. And what he's saying is don't register your business. That's where you create the liability to pay tax. And I think, depending on what type of business you're registering,
maybe locally.
Yeah, I remember my first business, people said, oh, you got to go down to City Hall and you got to ask them for a business license.
That's how they find out about you for sales tax and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yep. And so.
And why do you need their permission to run a business?
Right. And so this is an interesting question, because we see, you know, any retail store you go to, like we have this belief that they have to be they have to have a license and they have to be collecting sales tax. Is that actually true?
No. No, it's so not. There's levels to this thing. It's bullshit all the way down.
Is there like any business that has to have a license? Like if it's interstate commerce, if it's like, what's the?
Well, okay. You know, when that's a whole other show, really. But we get to the state level. I mean, remember we talked about what the definition of state actually is? It's always federal territory, and even inside a state, it's federal territory. So that's when all these state statutes and codes really just only apply. They always say in this state. They never say the actual name of the state. You know, like they don't say in California. They go in this state. Like, that's so weird. Why don't you just say in California? We're all in California or whatever state you're in.
That's an interesting distinction too, because we hear the state of California and then we hear the Republic of California. What's the difference?
Right. The Republic of California was the Republic of California was what it was called before it became before it joined the Union. I'm not sure you can call it the California Republic now. I mean, I don't think. The thing to focus on is really the substance so much more than the it's when you're dealing with the
but
state
are they
like
not
you,
defining two separate oh, entities like is, yeah, state, is one state, the constitutional state, yes,
yeah. Yeah, one is a de jure state and the other is a de facto state. Like state of California is a corporation that is basically an imposter acting like they're our duly chosen government, but really the only thing they govern is federal territory. Because they're basically sub corporations of the federal government, since the UCC and all that kind of stuff, really since the middle of last century, the states have been corporations, basically federal sub corporations, and you can choose to do business with them or not, just like any other corporation. They can't force you to do business with them, but they can trick you into doing business with them, and that's what they do most of the time when you sign these pieces of paper, like, oh, I'm going to get your license that allows me to have a business. Like, why do you need their permission?
So now I want to isolate what these two entities are. Cause so you have like your constitutional republic that was formed by the actual constitution of California.
Well, it was the states join a union that was formed by the Articles of Confederation. The Confederacy was called the United States of America. And that preceded the Constitution. It was the first Constitution for this country. And it's still – that's the second organic law, by the way, if you look at the organic laws I mentioned earlier. First one's Declaration of Independence, where the states, the colonies declared their independence and became 13 sovereign states. And then they formed a confederacy called the United States of America with the Articles of Confederation. And those states still exist in the sense that the American people still exist, but most people sign up to be – citizens/serfs of these corporations that stand in as the, we'll call it de facto government. Like they're effectively the government because there's not really any active. But you know, the whole idea of the USA was for people to govern themselves. So that's your choice. If you're in California Republic, you're a self-governing person and you're only subject to, you know, common law type of things. Like if you violate somebody else's rights, you know, they have a right to redress of that, right? You can't, like don't harm other people or their rights and do what you agreed to do. That's the common law.
So
basically, that's all you, as a co-sovereign. Am I making sense?
Yeah, but so like when we look at like the let's say the I don't know, a sheriff of the county of Los Angeles.
County is a federal subdivision.
So we're talking about the corporation already when we're talking about that sheriff and the people who vote
well, yeah,
for it.
Well, yeah, it's always county of whatever, isn't it? And city of blank, blank, blank. It's not the city. It's the city of, and then they say the name of the corporation. So this is the city of the corporation named California, or this is the county of whatever. Does that
as
make sense?
As opposed to, so you're
well,
saying
like it used to be Los Angeles County, and now it's the county of Los Angeles. County of, yeah. I mean, we're getting deep into the what the words mean here.
Like a long time ago when I started getting into this stuff, this is the stuff that really got confusing to me and really kind of seemed like, okay, we're just mixing words around. What does this really mean?
But, dude, it's black magic. Like, words are spells. That's why you have spelling contests and stuff. Words are like these thoughts that float around and they affect other people. They are really like magic spells, and especially the way that's used by the – so-called government. It is used as like this kind of black magic spell on you. Like I try to tell somebody, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that. I think there's like, there's still a lot of that I don't get, but as I've most recently been able to figure out more about the tax code than I ever have before, it's really starting to become more apparent to me. And I think there's probably still a lot of gaps that I need to fill in to understand a lot of this, but
yeah, but I don't want anybody to think they need a law degree to like get out to opt out of income tax. It's more important to know what you're not and to know what the default position. So that's one of the rules. One of the first things I teach my clients is just know what the default position is. You are the default position is, you know, you read the Declaration of Independence. It says your inalienable rights are self-evident. So you don't have to prove that you have rights. They're self-evident. Okay. So if anybody's going to come along and say you no longer have those rights, burden's on them. The burden of proof is on them. So I'm not a resident of whatever state unless, you know, it's that Stephen Crowder. He's like, change my mind. I'm not a resident. Change my mind. I'm not a citizen. Change my mind. You have to know what the default position is. And then and that's, I think, where a lot of people that have contested the income tax have fallen into problems where they try to prove they're not liable for the tax.
Well, and so
you don't have to prove a negative. You don't have to prove you didn't commit the murder. They have to prove that you did.
Here's an interesting question too, because so like you're saying, if you admit to being a citizen or a taxpayer or any of this stuff or earning wages, you're admitting to something. But I've been to court for like a million things where the judge will ask me for a traffic ticket. Well, were you driving? And I would say yes because I would think
you didn't know
that,
any better.
Yeah, I didn't know what driving meant. I just think driving means sitting behind the wheel and pressing the gas. But really,
like, what if you say no? Like, what, well, you ever answer no to that question?
What if you say, well, I don't have to answer that. I can exercise my Fifth Amendment right. You have the burden of proof to prove that I was driving.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you've ever done that, but like, you don't have any Fifth Amendment right in there. It's like a kangaroo. It's like a game show.
Right. That's another thing.
Called You Always Lose.
Yeah, because that's not even a real court.
But it is real. It's as real as it can be because you've given it the power to decide whether you're guilty or not guilty of the infraction. All the power comes from you.
Right.
You're contracting with the court. So you go in there and you've agreed to play and then you start arguing about your rights and you don't have any. You have the rights that, they could just decide you're guilty right there because they make all the rules there.
So James is asking a question going back to the, he says it varies from state to state. Some states require a license. What happens if you operate a business without a license? I know you're going to get a bunch of threatening letters. They're going to threaten to shut you down and all this other stuff. But what can they actually do if you've got like a little retail brick and mortar and you don't have a license?
I don't know. I mean, I can't. That's going to vary from state to state and how much they I've got some clients that own brick and mortar businesses, and I don't tell them. I don't get involved in their sales tax. You know, I just do income tax because that keeps me busy enough. And I'm like, look, I don't know what would happen, but if you want to test it out, go for it. You know, I did this with I had a client that had a similar situation. He was building something on his land and somebody came along and was like, well, you need a permit to blah, 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 blah. And he asked me what we should do about it. I was like, okay, well, just decide on what, just decide right now that maybe you don't have anything to lose. Because if it comes down to it, if they're going to send a SWAT team and force you to pay up, that you're going to pay up, right? You're not just going to go down like that. like within a hail of bullets. Right. I don't think that would happen. But let's just assume that let's just push this as far as we can and see what happens. You know, just being prepared that at any point, if the heat gets too high, just be prepared to pay it, and then so they'll go away. You know, and that's the mentality I encourage him to have. In the meantime, let's have some fun and see what happens.
Right.
And so we wrote back on this permit thing. It's like, what makes you think you have jurisdiction to tell me, you know, how to? They wanted his permission to come on the land and inspect. I was like, that's an easy one.
Can I come in and
say
take
permission
a look
denied? Yeah, permission
right, well,
denied.
Why are you asking?
And
if
don't
you
let
have
them on
the
there.
Right. Why are you asking? If you have the right.
Yeah, so isn't it interesting that they ask your permission? Like,
right.
if you got a right to force me to do stuff, why are you asking me, buddy? Just come on the land and do your thing.
What's really interesting is so I'm living down here in Mexico, and like someone that I know was building on their own land, kind of the same scenario, and they stuck a notice on their thing saying you need a permit. And this is where, you know, the land of the free, home of the brave.
Right.
I don't know if it's true of all Mexicans, but he was like, fuck that, I'm not getting a permit. And I think people know the government is kind of more like the mob here. Like, yeah, if you don't get the permit, they are going to, you know, they'll be more forceful.
Well,
but
you know what happened?
They don't
what happened
resources.
With this guy's case? This guy, we wrote back and I told this guy what to say. He said, just don't argue with them. Just go like, where's your evidence of jurisdiction of this? And they wrote back and they just cited like a statute from, you know, their code that said, this gives us our authority. And like, you didn't answer our question. Like, and then we're getting into Mark Stevens stuff, if you know him thing. Like, what facts do you rely on to presume that you have jurisdiction over my land? What facts? Because in order for you to claim that this statute applies to me, there have to be some facts. So what facts are you relying on? The fact that I'm physically on this land? And if that's all it takes, why aren't they just saying that? Well, you're physically on this land, so here you go. No, they don't say that because
right.
In the states, like in this state, they always say in this state because they're talking about federal areas. Inside, it means the same thing that it means in federal law. It means a federal state. It means an area of federal jurisdiction. That's really the only thing that they can claim to have any real authority over. And the rest of it is just duping you into going, oh, right. You know, because really that type of thing, if you agree to let them on the land to look at to do their inspection, you just agreed to the whole shebang, right?
So,
like otherwise, why would you let them on your land?
So let me ask you this, because I've seen some people try to do this with you know, with police, where they say, "I know my rights. I'm not going to allow you to perform an illegal search of me, and all this other stuff." And of course, the police just say, "No, we don't care if we have no jurisdiction. We don't care if we have no right to do this. We are going to forcefully arrest you illegally. We're going to do all this other stuff." And so, a lot of people have this, you know, this concept in their mind that if you try to resist government, even if you're right, that they are going to they're going to, you know, not bring a SWAT team maybe, but they're going to somehow forcefully do what they're going to do anyway without your consent.
Well, the police that are like pulling you over, that's right in your face, and the IRS is not in your face. All the IRS does is send paperwork, and I really recommend people just get a mailbox so you don't have to ever a private mailbox somewhere that's not your home, so you never have to, you know, wonder if somebody's just going to show up at your door. That's given me a lot of peace of mind over the years. Like, even if I had some trouble with whoever, like, I didn't have to worry about I've never had, like, an unwanted visitor show up on the door, you know, from the IRS or anywhere else. But they've shown up at my mailbox before. But, you know, this isn't, you know, the IRS is not the same thing as the police. They're pencil pushers, and they're very understaffed, and they just don't – I don't know if you've ever heard, like – the IRS admitted like in 20 years ago that only like 60 million people didn't file in 1996. And I don't remember 60 million people going to jail. Do you?
No.
They're trying to keep a lid on it. They don't want anybody to know how many people really are not filing. But if you look at their statistics, you go to the IRS website, you know how many people were prosecuted for failure to file a return in 2016?
It was like almost nothing. You told
like
me
150,
before.
Like 157,
right.
In a country of 320 million people.
With
60
million
just a
not
few,
filing.
Yeah, well, presumably, yeah. I mean, it's hard to know, but I think there's a lot more people not filing than are willing to admit it. You know, and the IRS certainly doesn't want everybody to know how toothless they really are.
Right.
Now, I'm not advocating that people just go, "Oh, I'm not going to file anymore." I'm just saying, if you did, it's probably safer than like. You know, when you go do the running of the bulls in Pamplona, like you're statistically very safe from getting gored by the bull. you have a better chance of being eaten by a shark probably than being prosecuted for failure to file a return. Not that I'm condoning that. I think your peace of mind's important. I think doing things the right way lets you sleep at night, and that's my clients all sleep well at night because that's why I do this as a consulting practice too, is because you're not just say this and everything will be great. No, I'm there to guide through the process.
Let me just clarify this one last thing, and we should probably wrap this up. But so you're talking about you wouldn't recommend not filing, but I hear from a lot of people who they say, I haven't filed in 30 years and I've never heard from the IRS. Right. But they're most likely not getting W-2'd and nobody's reporting any income, so the IRS has nothing to go on. Is that
– That's true. If you're off the grid, it's easier. If you're off the grid, it's easier, but they can still use your bank. If you're, you know, if you're using a bank account, they can use that as evidence of unreported income. So it's really comes down to what kind of evidence can they get against you. And really, I think even if you're off the grid, I think it's good to just know what you're going to say if you're ever challenged on it, you know, because some people, like, they end up, it's almost like they're on the lam. Like, I haven't filed in 30 years and
But if they show up, what do you do?
Yeah, I think you need to – I tell people like that. Look, if you ever feel like you're just like a – because I remember how I felt after 4 years of not filing, which is how I got started, and I didn't know nearly as much as I know now. I was a little bit like, hey, you know, I probably ought to bone up on this a little bit because what am I going to say if they just show up and with handcuffs or whatever? It does happen to some people, and they always have evidence. That's the thing. People assume the IRS can just do whatever they want. Which I think people that haven't filed for 30 years kind of know better, but no, everybody that you see being arrested for a tax crime is under contract. They have at least some evidence, whether it's a W-2 that wasn't challenged, or that person's own tax return that they lied on, or just bank statements that they got. Like, somebody raked in a lot of money, and their bank statements are used as evidence of that U.S. person status that we talked about, because you know the bank makes you sign something that says you're a citizen of the United States.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard the banks, so they make you fill out, especially after 9/11 and the Patriot Act, is you have to fill out this card that you put up your Social Security on, which is, from what I understand, this card itself is, it's got the fine print on there that basically makes it a tax statement.
It's the equivalent of a W-9 form, which says that you're not subject to backup withholding because you are a U.S., you're a citizen of the United States or other U.S. person. That's a federal denomination that you're saying on that form, and they can use that as at least a pretext for like, well, then everything in this bank account is potentially unreported income, which is why I tell people, like, you know, if it's working for you to not file, then okay, if you have a peace of mind, you might want to take a look at your exposure to risk possibly. I think somebody that hasn't filed for 30 years is probably safe, because that'd be really embarrassing for the IRS to finally haul that guy in to say, hey man, this guy got away with it for 30 years. But I just say don't just say I'm not going to file as just like that's all you're going to do, because they can still even if they don't arrest you, they can still like you said, with a W-2 or a 1099, they can still calculate a tax on you anyway, and then be garnishing your wages, and that's a situation. Yeah, that's some of my a client that I took on a couple of years ago was in that situation. He hadn't filed for about 15 years, and he earns like six figures. So I tell people that, like, oh my God, how's that guy not in jail? I said, he's not in jail because he makes a lot of money. They're still collecting taxes from him. They're just garnishing his wages, and he never filed. So we started to turn that around. We actually, what I recommended for his situation is like, well, you need them to reconsider this tax that they calculated. We need a new audit. You're going to actually ask for an audit, an audit reconsideration. And so we did a new return, and he declared what he determined his taxable income to be, which was zero. And it took him a while, but IRS removed all the tax. It was like $38,000 of tax they took off of his record. They released the lien, and they gave him a refund of all of his withholding. It was like $12,000.
Wow.
But it took them – I was amazed by that, but it took like about a year before they did it.
Yeah.
And I told him don't expect magic. All I was trying to do was get him in position. We're like, okay, we're claiming a refund here. I can just about guarantee you that they're not going to willingly give it to you. You'll probably have to sue them at some point to recover this refund. But at least we're preserving your right to do that, because there's deadlines on refunds. You have to claim a refund within 3 years after the tax has been collected. So that's what all we were doing, and that's what I told him to expect. So just all we're doing is preserving your right to someday sue the IRS to recover your $12,000 refund. And about a year later, they just gave it to him. I was like, wow. So, I wasn't really expecting that.
I've got,
but that
I've
just
got
shows
more...
the flip, the switch being flipped.
Yeah.
You know, the contract and being under a presumed contract versus saying, no, I don't want a contract. And so you have all the power. Go ahead.
Right. So I got one more question from Tracy, and yeah. She's asking if she can fill out a W-4. We already answered this, but let's just say it one more time. If she can fill out a W-4 and begin claiming exempt, and the answer is yes, you can give them a new W-4, claim exempt. You can ask them for a new W-4, and they'll give it to you.
You can change your withholding anytime. You have to be willing. You have to recognize the situation. If you're being forced to fill the form out, then it's under duress. And you have to question whether, like, this is anything you say on there it can be used against you anyway, because
right.
you're being forced to fill it out.
But you need
and
to have
you
need to have your plan. You're not just going to file exempt and then you're going to get your money and things are going to be over. You
well,
need to know they're going to.
Yeah, don't do it if you're just going to like declare that as income later anyway.
Right.
You know? Because they will penalize you for that. That's an interesting thing too. They can penalize you later for not having the money withheld in advance. But only if you get yourself under contract to them. That's the only way that's legal, you know, because they're penalizing you if you're not paying a tax before the tax was due. Like, isn't that weird?
Right.
It only makes sense if you understand it's a contractual thing that you agreed to after the fact. So later on, let's say you claim exempt all year long, you're like, all right, I got my paycheck. If you do your 1040 next year and just declare all that as wages on the return and declare it as income, you've defeated the whole purpose of doing that, because now you just signed yourself up for a tax bill and now you owe all this money. Plus, they're going to penalize you for not having the withholding. So it needs to be part of an overall plan of opting out. You can't do these things in isolation. If you're going to do exempt, you should have some, which I recommend reading my report that is linked on your page. And seeing what that's about, and maybe getting in touch with me.
Yeah.
After that.
So the report that he's talking about, it should be up above in the description for this video. You should see the link right there. He's on Twitter, No Thanks IRS. So definitely go follow him. Follow our page if you haven't already. And David, it's been great talking with you. And we got to do this again, because I know, like, we'll keep going for hours on all kinds of different
things. Yeah, we have a ton more stuff we could talk about. But
yeah,
probably enough information for people now. Sometimes you just open the fire hose of information and be like, whoa.
Yeah, and if you're interested in this stuff, definitely tune back in when I have David on again, because it's. I started learning this like probably close to 10 years ago, and it really took me until just now to really start connecting all the dots, and it all makes sense, and it sounds
right.
legal and not some scam and not some crazy
right.
conspiracy theory. So it does take a while to get used to it, but definitely read the report, and keep following the page, and follow David's Twitter, and, you know, just get all the information you need. And, you know, we're trying to make this simpler because
yes.
it is complicated, and we're trying to figure out the right way to make it understandable to everybody. Because really, like, the reality of it is, the tax code is a million pages, and it's too much for any of us to read, and we're all getting screwed over by it if we can't understand it.
Yeah,
so,
all you really need to understand from the code are the definitions of a few key terms. And that's what's the important thing, is like discernment. You don't have to. It's not that you need like more information. You need to know what's the right information. What's the information that's useful? And there's a lot of information out there about income tax that's kind of useless.
Right.
You know,
most of the tax code is useless.
Hard to wade through that. Oh,
it's,
well, yeah.
Most of it doesn't
apply to you to begin with.
Yeah, most of it is it's calculation of the code, or it's taxes that apply to these weird things. And there's really only a few lines in there that say who the tax actually applies to. And if you can understand that, then you know it's not you.
Yeah. Yep, that's it. That's the first question you should ask. Like, how do I know this applies to me? Like, with any law, like, where is the part where it says who this applies to? And it's usually in the they'll define some key terms, like employee, citizen, that kind of stuff. That's
right.
where you find out who it applies to. And, yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll cover that. We can cover the definitions of certain terms in another show in more detail.
Awesome.
And, yeah.
Awesome. I look
forward
to it.
Well, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, anytime. And thanks for coming on. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take
care.
And
taxation is theft, everybody.